by Yishlach. So it's sending Malachim over to Esav. The pasuk says Lamed Beis Dalet. It says Yishlach Yaakov Malachim in front of Esav. Achiv Arta Seir Sedei Adom. Yaakov sent Malachim in front of him to Esav, right? The land of Seir Sedei Adom. So Rashi tells us that these were Malachim Mamish, that they're referring to actual Malachim, that real angels that were sent to send a message over to Esav. The Gur Aryeh, the Mizrach, the Ber, Betzadet, Maskel, David, all of them four Shei Rashi will explain. It's learned out from the previous parsha, that the end of parsha Vayetze, it says that he's met up with Machanoim, these two camps of Malachim that were right opposite him. And since he met up with them, it makes sense by Yishlach Yaakov Malachim that it would refer to actual angels. I mean, that would make sense. We were just talking about Malachim and how he sends Malachim. You'd assume that the Malachim that he sent were the actual people. If it was men, it should have said the word Anashim so that nobody would be confused. Since we just mentioned Malachim, you should mention that word over here. The problem is that why would Yaakov go ahead and do that? Isn't that an issue? Like, why are you spending all these issues over here? Why are you going around doing such a thing when it would be so much easier to send regular messengers? I mean, it's not like that's a difficult thing to do. Why not send regular messengers? Well, that's really the question. Like, there's no point in sending them along. Is there? What's the point of it? So you're going to have 9 different answers to this question. So, number one, the Rabbeinu Bachaya says he did send regular messengers. He sent the Malachim together with the regular messengers. The reason why is because he was afraid of them being killed. Although, in theory, people would go out to war and they'd carry that little white flag that would be the innocent, whatever it was, a person like Esav doesn't care about stuff like that. A person like Esav is going to shoot him anyway. So therefore, Yaakov wanted to make sure that his messengers, these were his Avadim, his Talmidim. He didn't want his Talmidim to be killed when they were on their way out there to go tell Esav what they were going to do, so he sent Malachim with the messengers. And that's why it's a double meaning over here, because there are two things that he sent, messengers along with Malachim. The Ben Ishchai says Esav was schizophrenic, he changed his moods rapidly. Because of that, there were some times where he was Achiv, a brother, sometimes he acted like Esav. Yaakov was worried what would happen, so therefore he sent them over to protect them. That's the Ben Ishchai, how he adds it on, that Esav was literally a kook, so there was nothing to do about that. Rav Schwab also mentions the same answer. So we really have the same answer from the Rabbeinu Bachaya, the Ben Ishchai, and the Rav Schwab. They all give the basic same answer, that the Malachim were sent together with the messengers to make the messengers, to make sure that they weren't going to be killed. But Yaakov Kamenetsky says that it seems obvious that he sent regular messengers to Esav. It seems very obvious that way. It really is strange to send Malachim. That really goes against everything we know about the Avos and against what we know what they did. It wasn't a normal thing to send a Malachim. I always have the question, do you think Esav would have been able to see the Malachim? Let's say he was. Was he that great that he could see the Malachim? I don't know if Yishmael ever saw Malachim.
Yeah, well, you did when Yishmael came to Abraham. I mean, he said he showed guests.
Oh, the three guests. So those three guests were in human form on purpose to fool Abraham.
So that's
a good call. I mean, but could they have anything else? Hagar was able to see it. She specifically got a Nebuah, right? Did Esav ever get to see Malachim? And if he did, it's strange. And Rako Kamenetsky says, it's just strange. Why would Rashi leave the obvious shot and say that their messenger, when you have such a crazy one, why would you use this one? So Rav Yaakov says that sometimes Chazal are megala to us the greatness of a person by saying that they spoke to Malachim. But you know that already by Yaakov Avinu. You know what's going on over here. And plus, Chazal tell us this was wrong. The whole sending of gifts to Esav was something wrong. He shouldn't have done this. He shouldn't have woken up a sleeping dog, says Chazal. So I don't understand.
When you wake up anyway, he's like, oh, by the way, you know, Yaakov's back in town.
The Medrash says, in one opinion, that it isn't because he wasn't thinking about it, but because he sent messengers over to Esav saying, hey, I'm coming back, you know, so what's going on with you? Esav's like, you're coming back? If he didn't know, he was living in Edom, maybe he wouldn't have found out for years that Yaakov didn't come back. So that's the idea behind the Medrash.
He just, like, how we're supposed to deal with business.
So granted, no. That's another issue of how to deal with the other nations when you go out to business. That's another issue over here. But part of this is that should you flaunt yourself in front of Esav? Should you say, by is that a smart thing to do, or is that not a smart thing to do? According to that opinion of the Medrash, it was. And therefore, it's like waking up a sleeping dog. What are you thinking, Yaakov Avinu? That's one opinion of the Medrash. So according to that, Rabbi Yaakov says, why were Malachim involved in that? Why were there angels involved in that? So he says like this. The Malbim teaches that Yitzchak's plan was for Esav to be the Zvulun to Yaakov's Yisachar. That Yaakov would learn, and that Esav was going to be the guy who paid for it. Now, we know that that wasn't going to work. But Yaakov wasn't sure that his brother hadn't turned over a new leaf. It's been 20 years since he last saw him. 20 years in which there was no Yaakov Avinu, and he was sitting with Yitzchak and Rivka on his own. So maybe by now he's learned his lesson. Maybe he was a Zvulun. Maybe he was ready for that type of thing. But he didn't know. For that kind of information, to know what kind of a person Esav was, is Esav ready to be a Parnassa guy? Is he ready to work for it and to be able to be my guy? Is he able to do it?
Why does he go on to Esav? Why does he go ask his father? Send a messenger to his father. How are things based?
Well, he didn't. He sent it through Malachim. He wanted the Malachim to look deep into the matter and see how close it was. Instead of going to that. Yeah, and you can't go to his father. Remember, Yitzchak, you know, he sees the good in Esav. So that would be the last person to go to. Rivka would be the right person to go to. I don't know why he didn't send to Rivka. There may have been conversations between them. But what we know is that Esav already moved away. So it could be that there were messengers sent between one or the other. What?
I thought Yitzchak is aware of
Esav. He's aware of something, but nonetheless, Yaakov cannot rely on what Yitzchak is saying to know whether he's going to be that way. He wanted a Malach to go find out what's going on behind Esav's head before any type of partnership is going to be formed. And notice, by the way, at the end of the day, Esav does say to Yaakov, Elcho le'negdecho, I'll go with you. I'm willing to walk with you. I'm willing to be your parnassah. I'm willing to be Zvulun. But he already had sent Malachim. And the Malachim said, no, he's coming to get you and he's got 400 men. Although that never came into fruition, Yaakov got the message from the Malachim, this guy is not ready to be a Zvulun. That was the message that was sent over. That's the idea that he got. And he understood he's not ready. He will never be ready. And therefore, Yaakov had to act accordingly. And that the Chasam Sofer and Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says, it's not time. It's not time for this to happen. It's not going to work. And that's both of their pshatim. But there's a problem. Listen to this pshat from Rabbi Yaakov. Since Yaakov hid his daughter in a box, the reason why he hid his daughter in a box is that she wouldn't be seen by Esav, so she wouldn't be taken by Esav in a bad position, right? Now, I can understand that. Who wants to give their daughter over to a guy who's a possibly evil person? That's a terrible thing to do. Nobody would do that. Chazal tells us he was punished for doing so. Why was he punished? What's the big deal? Because you have him, the Manavshach. The Manavshach over here. If you feel he might be good enough to be Zvulun, and therefore you're sending Malachim, right, to go check out what kind of a person he is, then give him Vina. And then he will be that kind of a person. Since he sent Malachim and was still planning on not giving him Dina, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said he messed up on that one. Either don't send Malachim, assume he's evil and hide Dina, or send Malachim, allow him to marry Dina, give him the chance to be Zvulun.
And that's that. To go out there to see whether Esav is, whether Esav changed his way that he could be the Zvulun, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're like a reconnaissance mission, so they can see passing
so to speak, whatever it is.
They come back with a report, no, he's not there yet. Why would you then invest Dina into the situation? You would make good money after that.
You think that there's a possibility of changing him, and there was. Dina had the ability to change him. Dina changed Shem, right? Dina had the ability to turn around a person like Shem. But afterwards, Shem was willing to marry her afterward. Remember?
He was willing to marry her.
Whoa. Of course? A person who goes ahead and does such a thing is normally going to be attracted to the girl to the point where he's going to go to the father and say, you know what, I'm in that. There's something there.
Yeah, Dina had, to go to his father after what he did.
Dina had something. There's something that Dina had that had the ability to change things around. And we know Yaakov was punished for what happened with Dina. So the kasha is, why was Yaakov punished? We're looking behind the scenes and we're trying to say there was a punishment there.
If you're saying that he said a lot of things because he wasn't sure about Esav, that makes sense. But then he found out his report wasn't good, so then why would he give up Dina to her?
Found out that he was coming to fight. Dina could be he could be placated with Dina. You're sending him gifts. You're sending him other things in order to whatever. You have a girl who you know has the ability to change people around. You do have something that's there. If he's going to placate in any way, send Dina. That's the idea behind, if you send the Malachim, send Dina. But if you're not going to send Malachim, I understand that. You don't want to send Malachim because you know he's evil, then don't bother with Dina. There's no way you can send in Dina because you know he's just that evil. It's one of the two. If you think he's possibly there,
say
there.
There's so many, you learn later on the parts about all his kids and all his bad
subjects
that he had. And now we have a girl who's about 12 years old who's going to come and change everything around for him.
Dina was able to do deduce of things. And that's, again, I'm not going any further than what Chazal say. Chazal say Yaakov was punished and Dina was taken because he didn't offer her to Esau. That's a straight lesson. So we're explaining that measure, meaning understanding that measure. Yes, she did have the ability to. She did have it. There was something there that Dina had that nobody else had. That was something special. And that's the reason why. That's how Rabbi Yaakov uses that Rashi to say that's the idea. It's all based on what he did with the Malachim over here. Now, the Maril Diskin says he wanted to show how chashiv he was in the eyes of Hashem. This is a different idea altogether. He's showing off his Malachim to Esav. He's showing them off. He's trying to show what would that this should be enough for Esav to turn around and just go away. Do you see what I have? You see that I have Malachim? Kedusha Rim says this was a last-ditch effort to change Esav, to make him into a better person. If he sees these Malachim and decides to turn his life around, making me his Rebbe, says Yaakovinu, allowing me to teach him how to act and think, then great. And if he doesn't, then Esav is gone. There's nothing that we're going to be able to do with him ever again.
Why should Esav all of a sudden have to accept Yaakov as his Rebbe and everything? Like, and you're talking about it being a zibul and everything. I mean, aside from that, I don't like hoping getting into learning because there's no Torah here, and Yaakov didn't tell me he had children who continue, whatever. Oh, yeah.
You're wrong. you're totally wrong.
Okay, fine. But that's not
Abadim, yes. He had Abadim.
Okay, fine. But, okay, fine.
What do you think they did with their Abadim? These were all Talmidim. Hanefesh Asher Asu Bechara. How do you understand that line? Why didn't it just say Abadim?
I'm wrong. This isn't really about Yaakov.
No, you're wondering about Yaakov? So you don't think that any of them from then on ever took on any Abadim or allowed anybody else to learn about that?
That's ridiculous. That's my main question. I don't think it's ridiculous, but that's my main question. My main question here is, Esav, you could arguably felt wronged by what Yaakov did to by the brothers. Okay, yes, he sold his Bechara when he was 15, but it was Yitzchak who told Esav to go do it, and not, he didn't tell Yaakov.
And afterward, when Yitzchak said,
well, yeah, all of a sudden, he disappears, he runs away from him for 20 years, and now he's coming from Seir, where he's the leader of an entire, you know, small, like, tribe already, and now, to say that Yaakov's coming and expecting to be Esav's accepted as his Rebbe,
we have very different expectations of what we're expecting from the Chumash. Hold on a second. We have very different expectations. Hold on a second.
Hold on, let me finish.
You have no idea what you're talking about.
What are you talking about? No, I do. Look at the text. He's coming to plead for mercy, but he doesn't kill him.
We are now going to explain how these different drushes work out. If you've noticed over here, we have 9 different pshatim over here. Now, why do we have 9 different pshatim? Meaning, there are different ways and methods of understanding the text. According to the first text that you are trying to give out over here, yes, I have answers to that based on the Rabbeinu Bechaya. I have other answers based on the Netziv. I am giving other answers based on the other ways of understanding the text, based on that. But you can't ask based on your understanding of the text to try to understand what they're trying to go through. I'm looking at the Maral Diskin saying, you can't, that's not their way of understanding the text.
What do they do with this problem?
It's not a problem. You go with Midrashim, which we have through Rashi and through Chazal. There's no question if you go with these Midrashim Chazal and then answering with this type of text. If you want to use your pshat and that's the only way to look at the Chumash and you have one way of understanding it, I'm fine with that. I am fine with that, and you use the Rabbeinu Bechaya for that. That's a great answer. But if you want to go further in the text and say there's another thing that we're explaining over here, well, guess what? I've got another Medrash for you, and here's the way to understand that Medrash. That's how Medrash works. We're going further than your simple understanding of the text where nobody is teaching anyone Torah. I'm fine with that. You don't want to believe that, that's fine.
Okay.
Go for it. I'm just going with the other opinions that are saying that's how it goes.
That is my main point, though, was that it just seems a little bit out of place. Yaakov's praying for his life.
If we understand that the way that we're learning is beyond what the text is telling us, which means that Esav and Yaakov are now in a position to understand what their goal in life is, that Yitzchak, you know, had already accepted Yaakov as the learning guy, had already accepted Esav as the parnasa guy, that they knew these plans going in, they knew that Yaakov got both. Yaakov is on a last-ditch effort to understand this could still work. There's still a possibility of Zvulun. There's still a possibility of you being involved in Klal Yisrael. I'm giving you one last-ditch effort to choose. You can come with me. You can come down to Mitzrayim for Golos. You can be with me the whole time and be there at Matan Torah. Your call, Esav. Do you want it or do you not want it? If we go into that idea where they're going deeper than just a bunch of kids and a little fight over some candies, then yes, in economy, okay, there is something there.
You're cheapening the way I explain things. I'm not saying it's a fight over candies.
Yeah, but I'm making it like
$5. I think the point is that Esav said there's a hard way. There's nothing for feelings there. and to expect Esau to like get on his knees.
Again, in that idea, in that line, I understand it. You have to go with the Rabbeinu Bachaya when you're learning such a thing. But if you're going deeper, it's not just that they were upset at each other. They knew that there's more than what was there. I mean, again, we're talking about a guy who's been sitting and doing something for 63 to 77 years. I don't know if you're saying it wasn't Torah, but he was clearly not getting married and doing something for that many years.
My entire point was that it seems very outlandish to say that now Yaakov is coming with expectations to be the Rebbe.
The expectations of his father.
To be, what's it called?
The expectations of his father. The same expectations of his father. That's exactly what his father expected of him. That's what he was doing. The original idea. Who says he didn't? Again, who says he didn't? I didn't say he didn't. You can go on the tape and look out, and I said it's possible he did send messengers. But Yitzchak, he didn't know if he could be. I said Yitzchak as well. Yitzchak, he didn't know if he could listen because he was seeing the good. You can listen to it. Those who are listening, you can go ahead and tell me the truth. But I did say it's possible the messengers were sent. But again, you're going with one explanation of the text. We're going with more. We're trying to explain it with more facets than just what meets the eye. You have to.
These people are obviously princes of the world. Everybody kind of defers to Abraham, as we see, and Yitzchak with Abimelech, and Yaakov with Binu. So it's not like these are just stomp normal people that we're learning about. Obviously, these are people beyond just a normal human being. So, and we know that their whole goal was to create all
problems. But it seems
why was Esav upset that he lost the brothers? Why?
Because this is an important brother to get from his father. I don't know, but what does that have to do with it? Yeah,
really?
Coming back.
We've had this so many times before that everybody's trying to get brachos from their dad. This just happened time after time after time again. How many people's dads is Abraham? We still don't have any, or Noah, or Shem, or Aver. We don't have such concepts. So all of a sudden, this bracha becomes the most important thing in the world, where at the age of 63, you're sitting there and saying, I better get this bracha, or else my whole life is not worth it.
It's something that's important to both of them. What does that have to do with
it? I don't know if it's that important. We don't know that. All we know is there's something there that Yitzchak told him to go. But regardless, but that's good. Let's go on. So now we got, that's number three. Number four. Then it says the original plan was to bring these gifts to Esav himself. He just wasn't sure how dangerous Esav was. That was his fear. His fear was he wasn't sure. The Malachim were only there to go to see how scary would it be if he went alone. Instead of sending it through his above them, instead of sending it in some other way, is it better for me to go on myself or on my own or something else? Now, messengers may be able to read regular intentions or things like that, but he wanted to go further. Is there something that's there? When the Malachim came back and said that Esav is ready to wage war, he's got 400 men waiting to come get you, then he realized he's got to send gifts in front of him with somebody else, and then he would somehow get himself ready to meet Esav, knowing that something could be there. Nitziv goes on in that, but that's the first. Now, the Chanukah Satorah says this is a constant machlokas between the two brothers, where they argued this point many, many times over. Who's greater, humans or Malachim? That was the idea that they always argued about, in which Yaakov Avinu always claimed that humans can be greater than angels, while Esav always claimed no, angels can be greater than humans, and that led to their ideas throughout all of life. Esav always said, human beings make mistakes, we're fallible, and we can never fix ourselves. So Yaakov said, no, human beings are fallible, but we have the ability to do tshuva. We can become greater than Malachim. We can build ourselves up by making the right decisions. Granted, you can make wrong decisions sometimes, but you can build yourself up, and if you do that, then you're greater than Malachim, and you can rule over the Malachim. This was the quintessential proof. When Yaakov sent Malachim to Esau, he was able to show him that not only are the angels above you, like he saw originally in the dream, where the angels were above him in the ladder, but they were also behind him, below him, so to speak. The Machanoim, the camps of angels, came to him as if they were camped underneath Yaakov. And Yaakov, you know, had the ability to send them over. That shows Esav he was right and Esav was wrong. Human beings have the ability to rule over Malachim, says the Chanukah Satorah, and that's the idea. I will tell you that I took some creative license with that. I don't think that's exactly what the Chanukah Satorah says, but I took some extra creative license in that to be able to say that, because I think that makes a lot more sense than what I saw in the Chanukah Torah. Now, why would he have sent angels? Yeah. The Noam Elimelech says that the way of a tzaddik is to say things that seem simple while really talking to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That every conversation you have with a tzaddik, it may seem that he's looking at you and talking to you. He's not. He's really talking to God while he's talking to you. There were many different instances where they said that the Noam Elimelech was writing, just like doing things with his hands, and that nobody could understand what he's doing. He's talking regular conversations and he's going like that the entire time. And finally, one of the guys, you know, went behind him and looked at what he was doing. He was writing Yud Hey Vav and Hey, right every time he was talking while he was talking with other people. And there were other times where he's staring off into space and he's looking up and down and looking like that, where his eyes were going up and down the whole time. And he told one of the Shemashim later on that he's putting Yud Hey Vav Hey wherever he went. Noam Elimelech was not a normal person. let's put that out there for everybody. Noam Elimelech was not one of the more normal ones of Blazhensk. Noam Elimelech says that really this entire conversation was in order. It was really his conversation with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and it was as if he was talking to Esav itself. He chose Malachim to relay this message over, so really it was he's talking to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but it was to Esav indirectly. And everything was being done as if it was a tefillah. Instead of that, Noam Elimelech then translates it into a tefillah of what's going on. But that's why he sent over Malachim, to make sure that it was more of an angelic tefillah than it was anything else. The Chumash Eish is quoted by one of those Sfarim, one of the Likud Sfarim. I do not know who it is. It says Yaakov didn't want to send regular people to Esav because he felt they were his Talmidim. He didn't want his Talmidim affected by seeing such an evil person. Looking at evil people affects you. He didn't want them going over there because he knew. But Malachim won't be as affected, so he sent over the Malachim instead. And that's the reason why he sent over Malachim instead of Talmidim. Said what?
What did he bring his children?
I think originally the plan was not to see Esav. Only once he defeated the Malach of Esav and he realized that he had a power over Esav, that's when he noticed the two camps that he was keeping separate from one another. All of a sudden he puts them together and he just lines them up in front of Esav. It becomes totally different. After the Malach, he realized he has the ability to win. This is not a question. Esav won't be able to touch him. He won't be able to touch him. And that's the only reason why. So something happened after that fight. That's maybe for another time. But that's that. The Rebusha Ora, he says the purpose of these Malachim was simply to scare Esav. They were there to let him know he had the protection if he needed. He had protection. He's got Malachim on his back. He's perfectly fine. He sent over, what's ironic, I feel, about this pshat of the Levusha Ora, this is one of the Megid Al Mepor Shirashi, one of the pshatim that he says is that when he sent the Malachim ahead of him to go take care, he seemed to be more vulnerable. He left himself open for the Malach of Esav to come and destroy him. Is that interesting? He sends the Malachim over to show Esav that I'm protected. And then he's not protected when he goes to the Pachim Ketanim to go around. What? See, it doesn't make it because the Malachim already came back. That's the problem. You know what I'm saying? It's weird. But yeah.
He has a leverage. So why is he sending gifts?
See, that's a good question. The first thing he does is he sends over the Malachim, right? And he's trying to give over all these things. But he still understands that Esav gets Olam Hazeh. So even after everything's said and done, even when he sends over these scare tactics, and even where he's saying, Vayili Shor B'chamor Eved B'tzom B'shifcha, and he's saying, like, look at all the power that I have, nonetheless, he's still going in and sending gifts because he knows Esav is supposed to get this world, he's got the next world. So there still is a power that Esav has. Now, what is that? Again, before the Malach comes, before he fights the Malach, right, of Esav, and whatever that means, right, he still understands. There's something that he has to be scared of. What exactly that is and what exactly that was, he wasn't sure. So he sends over a gift, right? But not a crazy gift. Something to be there. Again, look at the numbers. If you count the camels as 30 each, 30 female camels and 30 kids, then altogether the numbers are 580 animals. 580 is the gematria of Seir. That's not a coincidence. That's on purpose. He does that in order to show Esav that he's being mevatel himself to him a little bit. Why he does that is strange, but nonetheless, that he does. Rabbunim Mipshusla says that the reason why the Torah feels it necessary to send the Malachim is to tell you that even when you're running away from Esav or any other enemy and you need help, you're even able to ask Malachim to save you. You're able to ask the Malachim to come help you, and that's allowed. Now, there are opinions, by the way, as a side note, that you're not allowed to ask Malachim for things. You know there are people that have a minhag not to say Borchuni L'Shalom on Friday night? They say Shalom Aleichem, they say Boachim L'Shalom, they do Tzeiskam L'Shalom, they don't do Borchuni L'Shalom. Why? Exactly. They don't. Well, some people don't do that at all, but they specifically, they'll say Shalom Aleichem, they won't do Borchuni L'Shalom. Why? Because they don't want to ask a Malach for anything. They don't ask Malachim for help in something that's not necessarily needed. And that's a crazy pshat altogether. But nonetheless, they do that. They won't do, what's the line on in Slichos? Malachi Rachamim Meshor Se El Yon, right? Machnisei Rachamim in the Slichos. They won't do that because they don't ask Malachim for anything whatsoever. Now, the Gemara seems many, many times, I mean, even Yaakovino himself, what does he do to the Malach? after he fights him and he defeats him. What does he do? He asks for a bracha. So it's clear that you are allowed to ask for a bracha in some way, shape, or form. I don't know how they answer that up, to be honest with you. I'm not so sure what they do. But there is something there, but you are allowed to ask Malachim to help. He says, we learned that from over here. Now, what does it mean that he sent the Malacha lefanov, right? Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim lefanov, Eliezer v'Achiv. The word lefanov seems extraneous, because obviously Esav is in front of him. Where else would he be? So what does it mean in front of us? I got four answers to this question. Mashi Lach says, they only appeared as real Malachim to Yaakov. To Esav, they looked like regular people, since he couldn't handle such Kedusha.
What's the exact opposite by Avram and Lot?
Crazy, right? Because we do. We say that Avram, they look like people, and by Lot, they look like Malachim, because he couldn't handle it.
We couldn't compare the two.
I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. But that's what the Mashi Lach says, is the Ishkitzer.
Right. By Esav, they appeared, they appeared as people because he couldn't handle the sight of Malachim, whereas by Avraham, the Torah is comparing the Malachim to Avraham. So they say that they were called by Hashem because compared to Avraham, they were Hashem.
Oh, good call. So that and that. They were Malachim. That's a good call. And over here, it's not a comparison. It's just simply put, he couldn't handle Malachim as Malachim. He had to see them as people. That the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says something crazy. Based on the Gemara, angels are the size of a third of the world. Right? So these three Malachim, right, the three Malachim that came to Avraham Avinu, would have been each one of them the size of the world. So it's interesting. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says, so here's what happened. They were right there in front of Yaakov, and they said, Yaakov said to them, go check out how Esav's doing. And they're like, okay. And he just turned around and went to Esav. There is no back to a Malach, so I don't know how that works exactly. But they went to Esav, and then there were still Lefanov, still in front of Yaakov Avinu. That's an interesting little shot from the Or HaChaim using the Gemara. The Ma'aril says these Malachim were before him. They were sent before him because they were not there for him alone, but they were all for future generations. They were Lefanov for all of those that were in front of him for all future generations. All the children are going to be protected by the Malachim and the Ketrugim that are out there in the world. Rav Chaim Kanievsky says that no other Av traveled alone like this. There was no other Av like this. So this represents Bnei Yisrael when they feel like they're on their own. And that's the line that we say, me and Rafi, does anybody else say that on a Friday night? Right, but the line, do you ever say that? Before Ishisayah, right? So we sing that, right? So we have a whole song to it, very slow and very, very nice, right? We don't do it slow, but it used to be slow. We just turned it into fast. But is the idea that he was traveling with Malachim. They were always in front of him. He always had Malachim that were in front of him wherever he went. And that's the idea he says over there. Okay, now who were these Malachim that he sent? Who were these Malachim over here? We got a lot of answers over here. The Moshe Zakenim says, in the last week's parsha, they were the Machanoim, right? Machanoim stands for Me'osam Chayolos Notal Yaakov Malachim. That's Machanoim. From those armies that came to Yaakov, he sent the Malachim over to Esav. That's the Rosh HaTevis. That's from the Moshe of Zakenim. And that's why he sent it over. The Yaakov Rubin in the Baal Torah says there were 400 million Malachim that went to Esav. And in fact, the Medrash tells us that each one of them went up to Esav and gave him a punch in the face. I don't know, face, the arm. But they punched Esav and they hit all of his men. 400 million Malachim were sent out to be able to go. That's from the Yaakov Rubin in the Baal Torah.
The world.
And that's huge. Yeah, that'd be a lot altogether. I would tell you that. The punch in the face also doesn't make much sense.
It's like the moon smashing into the earth.
Yeah, just that would be awesome. That would be absolutely awesome. I would assume that what it means to a third of the world is that they have rulership over a third of the world. He was using it in a literal sense in order to explain it, but I believe that what it means by a third of the world is that they understand that the Malachim are the size, meaning they take over a third of the world. Michal, Gabriel, and Raphael take over together the whole world. I think that's what it means by that. What?
Is it Gemara?
Yeah, it's a Gemara that says third of the world. I gotta remember where it is. It's somewhere in Chulin, I believe, but I don't remember offhand where it is. Yonas Menuziel says, interesting little shot. You ready for this? Remember the Malachim that went up to Sodom? In the beginning of Parsha Vayetze, it says the Malachim that went up the ladder. The Malachim that went up the ladder were Gabriel and Michal / Raphael. Why? Because we all know that Gabriel, Michal, Raphael were the ones that went over to Avraham Avinu, and they told Avraham Avinu that he was going to have a baby, and that there was Sodom was going to be destroyed, and that they were going to heal Avraham Avinu, right? One of them went to go save Lot. Who was it? We don't know if it's Raphael or Michal. One of the two. Gabriel wants to destroy Sodom. Raphael or Michal went. So whichever one, right? They went and they said the words to Lot, Mashchisim Anachno Zamakom Hazeh. We are destroying this area. That's what they said. Mashchisim Anachno Zamakom Hazeh. We're going to destroy this area. They should have said Mashchis Hashem as a Makom Hazeh, but they said Mashchisim Anachno. Says Targum Yonis Menuzil in the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, they were punished. They had to stay down on earth for 137 years as punishment for attributing the destruction of Sodom to themselves and not to Hashem. 137 years they were punished and they had to stay down on earth. They went up after 137 years. On the ladder, they went up to Shemayim and other Melachim came down to take care of Yaakov Vinu as he was going outside into Chutz Laretz. That's what Targum Yonis Menuzil says. When Yaakov Vinu came back, guess who came back? Gabriel and Adam Michal or Raphael. They came back down to him. Those were the Malachim that he sent over to Esav. So that's the idea. Revoltson says that he sent those Malachim specifically over to Esav to go scout out what's going to be with them. Netzut HaShemshin says the best shot in the world that you'll ever hear in your life. Okay, here we go. Ezras Avosenu, that we all say during the morning. Everybody knows where Ezras Avosenu is, right? Ezras Avosenu. Ezras is the gematria of 677. 677 is the gematria of the three Malachim that take care of the Avos. Those three Malachim that take care of the Avos are Michael, Malkiel, and Shan. Shanandi, the last part of the name is El. Michoel, Malkiel, and Shanandi. Obviously, Michoel, Malkiel, and Shanandi with the name El is the gematria of 677. Works out pretty good, right? So those are the Malachim that are Ezra, so saying they help out our fathers. You think we're done? Oh, we're not done. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim is the gematria of 677. So the Malachim that he sent were Michoel, Malkiel, and Shanandi. Now you understand Rashi. What did Rashi say when he said that Yishlach Yaakov Malachim, Malachim?
Mamish.
Mamish stands for Michoel, Malkiel, Shanandi. And that's what he's referring to. Is that an unbelievable pshat? Unbelievable intuition. And he says, that's what Rashi was referring to. One of the craziest little pshatim I think I've heard in a long, long time. He's telling you exactly what welcome they were. I love it. I absolutely love it. That's one of my favorite intuition of all time. That's that. There's a little bit more to it, but we're skipping it for now. The Chidah says that he took Malachim that he was able to create through mitzvos, and he sent them over to Esav. Maybe that's how he was able to tell them, remember, in love on Garti, says Rashi, Taryag Mitzvos Shamarti, right? I kept 613 mitzvos. As a side note, parenthetically, he said I kept 613 mitzvos, right? One of those 613 mitzvos is you're not allowed to marry two sisters.
Right.
How do you keep 613 mitzvos? I understand if you say he kept every mitzvah that he could have kept. Fine. Okay? But you're saying 613 mitzvahs, one of them is Achlusisha, how do you explain it? I have five answers. It's a great question. Okay, anyway, but that's that. Tayyag mitzvahs, what?
One
is Gershni, Skarik, Kuf, and Shinola Dummy, so they were never really sisters. That's the easy one. That's the easy way out. You want the real stuff, the real shot. I know, it's a cop-out answer. I'm just saying, that's the easy one. You can say it. Nonetheless, it is said. I have that. There are altogether, I have 13 answers as to how we can marry sisters in the first place. Only seven of them answer this question, though. Only seven of them answer this question, but there are 13 answers as to how he was able to marry two sisters. One of them, the best one, is Lubavitcher Rebbe. But it's funny because I think Lubavitcher Rebbe stole it from the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. It's quoted from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and they all quoted from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. But I found it in the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, and I'm like, wait a second. So I found it in there. Also, Marsha, Sanhedrin, second, there's some crazy answers. Like Reb Moshe, in Igris Moshe, writes an answer to the question. There's some great stuff out there. Anyway, the Sfatam says what the Chidah says a little bit clearer. He sent Malachim of Chutz Laretz to Esav, which means the Malachim that he created from mitzvahs that he had done out there. Now, what mitzvahs? The Sefer Yismach Moshe says specifically from the mitzvah of tefillin, that Yaakov kept the mitzvah of tefillin in Chutz Laretz, and he sent those Malachim that he created over to Esav, says Rav Shur. Rav Shur says the following, Rav Avram Shur. He says the following to explain it. He says, Esav's power is in his hair. Remember, he took over the land called Seir, and that again is not a coincidence. It refers to the power in the hair, something that grows out from the head. Now, that stems from your bad thoughts. I don't quite get that. I don't fully understand that. But the Ben Yishchai says all over the place that your hair grows from the bad thoughts that one has in one's head. Not the beard. The beard is only from Kadosh thoughts. The hair on your head grows from bad thoughts that a person has, he said. That's why he's called Seir. That's his power. He goes above your head, so to speak, on top of your Kedusha, and he controls your brain. That the taivas of the Yetzer Hara are able to control you. That Esav controlling everything that you have. We could be mevatel that by wearing tefillin shel rosh. Where do we put the tefillin shel rosh? On top of the seir. You get it? It's so simple. You put the tefillin shorosh on top of the seder, on top of the hair right there, you're able to be misgaber on all those bad thoughts. Esav's issue is that he will never be mekabel malchus shamayim. He'll never be mekabel ol malchus shamayim. He'll never allow that to happen. So Yaakov was mekabel ol malchus shamayim. He accepted the yoke of heaven, represented by putting on tefillin. I don't know if Yaakov actually put on tefillin. As Binyamin said before, it's hard to understand that they would have had the mitzvah of tefillin. That's difficult to understand. Forget about wearing tefillin. It's that the mitzvah of tefillin, which stands for being mekabel ol malchus shamayim in yourself, controlling yourself, allows you to overcome the seir, the thoughts that pop into your head. If you're able to control yourself, he took those mitzvahs, sent them over to Esav and said, I can control myself. You can't rule over me. I'm able to control myself, and that's what it means he sent Malachim over. He sent over his ideas. I'm sorry? And, according to the Grah, you know, they asked the Grah why the Grah didn't wear Rabbeinu Tam. The Grah was asked by Rechaim Volozhin why he didn't wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. Right, he asked why he didn't do it. He said, if I would wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, then I'd have to wear 128 different pairs of tefillin. He said, why? Because if you go through all the shittos, there's Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, there's all the other Shemusha Rabba, there's the other opinions, and then if you go according to all the different shittos and shots that are not answered regarding tefillin, you keep adding on, and it ends up being there's 128 different pairs of tefillin. According to another shot, 256 that you'd have to wear altogether. So he never put them on. He never put on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. Okay, some people do, and Rabbeinu Tam is still special, but that's out there. I will tell you, by the way, if you understand this correctly, Ko Samun Esav, this is what you say to Esav. Ko is the doctor of 25. That's the 25 letters in Shema Yisrael Shema Elkeinu Hashem Echad, right? Where you're Mekabel Ol Malchus Shamayim. That's what you do when you say Shema. That's what he's hinting to. Now, you got a great stuff over here. That's, again, Mamish. What does Rashi say? Malachim Mamish? Malachim that were Mekabel Malchus Shamayim. That's the Radomsker that he says over there. That's the Pshat in Rashi, and that's how you understand Rashi over there. We're going to end off with this. Moshe Feinstein asked the famous question. He says, why would you be Menachem Yisri Yosef? Listen, sending over angels is a crazy miracle. Using a miracle takes away from your merits in the world to come. Why would he take away from his merits in the world to come for seemingly no reason to send over Malachim? Why would you do that? That's silly. You're using up all your merits to go ahead and send these Malachim. What was the point of that? So listen to what he says over here. He says the following. He says, for most people, you're right, that would be a crazy miracle and that would be a problem. Yaakov was not like that. There's a Gemara in Tainis Daf Chof. Tainis Daf Chof Hey about Rabbi Chanina Mendoza. Rabbi Chanina Mendoza, we remember this daughter, we all know this. His daughter was crying, so he went up to his daughter and he said, BT, why are you crying? And she said, Abba, I messed up. It's Friday night and I made vinegar. I lit the candles with vinegar instead of oil. So now we're not going to have lights for Friday night. What am I going to do? And what did Rabbi Chanina Mendoza say? BT, Ma'ichbat Lecha. It's the first time, and I believe the only time in Shas where the words Ma'ichbat Lecha are used. I believe it's the only time in Shas. Ma'ichbat Lecha. What? Loch. Yeah, Ma'ichbat Loch. I don't speak Hebrew, but Ma'ichbat Loch. What do you care, right? The same way that a Kodesh Baruch Hu allows the oil to stay lit, he'll so too let the vinegar stay lit. Now the kasha that you have to ask on that is, what do you mean? Oil staying lit is natural. Vinegar staying lit is not the same. What did he mean by that? Well, just like the oil, just like the vinegar. Well, that's not the same at all. They're not comparable. The pshat is, Rabbi Chanina Mendoza considered oil being lit to be a crazy miracle. Does anybody know how fluorescent lights work? Yeah. Do you have any idea? No. Okay, some people do. Okay, some people do. But most people have no idea how fluorescent lights work, right? You just turn on the switch and it goes on. And if it's not going on, you're just like, oh, that's strange. Nobody thinks anything of it. And to you, that seemingly should be the biggest miracle in the world. Because you have no clue what's going on. If you treat everything in the world as a miracle, not as a natural formation, but everything is a miracle, then even miracles are the same thing as natural occurrences. In other words, Rabbi Chanina Mendoza looked at oil and he said, he doesn't look at it and say the natural properties of oil allow for lights to be remain lit. He said, no. Oil being lit is because God wants it to stay that way. He made it within nature for it to be that way, but he can make anything happen. So the same way that God wants oil to be lit at some points, maybe at some points he wants to make vinegar lit. To me, it's the same thing. Only for a guy like Rabbi Chanina Mendoza can such miracles happen for. For me, because I believe that oil can be lit naturally, for me to have vinegar light for me, I'm going to go crazy. I'm going to be like, oh my gosh, vinegar! Right? That's what I'm going to do. But Rabbi Chanina Mendoza would have to look at it and say, right, it's the same thing as oil. Rabbi Chanina Mendoza looks at vinegar being lit and says, what's the big deal? That's not a big miracle. But if you have that, then you'll have miracles like Rabbi Chanina Mendoza. And that's Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu understood that even walking is a miracle. Getting up and walking, your legs moving, and your legs walking over to Esav was a miracle. Even just walking is a miracle. If even walking is a miracle, then it's not that big of a deal to send Malachim. Because Yaakov was sitting there and saying, that's a miracle, that's a miracle. What's the difference? Who cares if I send messengers that can walk or if I send angels that'll go there? It makes no difference to me. And that's why Rav Moshe Feinstein says there's no Menachem Yitzchi Yosef. He says this yisod 7 times in the Darash Moshe. 7 times Rav Moshe goes over this idea. It's a crazy, crazy idea to think about. But that's the shot behind the Rav Moshe guys. We'll stop.